welcome to Hometown Alaska. I'm your host, Kathleen McCoy. Our topic for today is what comes next for Alaska. Our oil industry is in a mature phase and can no longer deliver the gifts of growth and development that it did for decades. While it is still with us, we need to find another path forward. Like-minded Alaskans have been turning this question over in their minds. A relatively new group called Alaska Version 3 is engaged in just these discussions. When I suggested that AKV3, its shorthand name, reminded me of a think tank, I was corrected. We are more of a do tank, said a member. Today, we'll hear their framework for thinking about what comes next for Alaska and helping to do what comes next for Alaska. We'll hear how they tackle identifying a new economy for the state and what qualities they look for in this new economy. A current project getting their attention is what will become of the site where the former Alaska Native Hospital stood at 3rd and Ingra. It's undergoing transformation now. How do plans for this site fit into a new version of Alaska's economy? It's not going to be a factory, it's not going to be a mine, but what? So stay tuned to find out. We'll talk about the winning entries in a recent writing contest to envision the next Alaska. What kinds of ideas did writers come up with? And more to the point, what ideas do you have? What will Alaska look like in 30 years or 300 years? One thing is, we all need a future, so let's talk about it. So I want to let our listeners know we have many guests on our phone lines today, and although we want you to send us ideas, you know, what is your thought about the next Alaska economy? I think it'd be easiest for you if you email us at hometown@alaskapublic.org. You can try our phone lines, 550-8433. But I suspect with the many guests that we are juggling today, it may be difficult to get in. So I think the email might be the easiest way, and that's hometown@alaskapublic.org. And I'd love to hear your ideas. I think you're going to be stimulated by what you hear today. You'll hear some frustration. You'll hear some diagnostics. You'll hear some imagining. But it's all directed at where do we go from here? So I also want to let our audience know that on our homepage, on the homepage for Hometown Alaska, we do have a lot of links to Alaska Version 3, their website, how to email them, some of the papers that they've put up on agile economies and how things move forward. There's just a lot there. So if this topic intrigues you and you want to stay connected, you can easily find how to do that on Hometown Alaska here at Alaska Public Media. All right, I'm going to move right to our guests. We honestly have quite a load of guests just because there's a lot to talk about with Alaska Version 3.0. So in this first segment, I'm going to welcome Kai Holland. Welcome, Kai. I hear you on the phone. Are you there?
I am. Kathleen, thank you so much for this opportunity and the show. I'm looking forward to the discussion that we're going to have.
Absolutely. I plan to pick your brain. And let me just say that I first met Kai over at the College of Business at UAA. He was attending many meetings over there related to business plan competitions and getting business students thinking about their next venture, I guess. But Kai has also taught for a long time at Alaska Public University. He's been very active in the entrepreneurial community. And something I didn't know is that you've been very active in your community council. So you have kind of a community activism approach, but also your head in entrepreneurialism. So Kai, I want to say welcome to Hometown Alaska. And I'm also going to just quickly introduce Sarah Katari. Sarah began her own creative services firm, and I don't know exactly how she got linked up with Alaska Version 3, but we'll hear about that when we bring her bring them on the air to talk with us. So, Kai, let me jump in with you, and I'm going to say, Sarah, jump in at any time. We'll get the conversation going, and if you want to add on to what Kai is explaining, because I know you have a communications role with Alaska Version 3, and you may just have additional things to add. So, Kai, I'm going to start with you, though, and just want to say, let's begin with talking about the crossroads that Alaska is on. I've read some of your writings on your blog and on the Alaska Version 3 site, but describe the crossroads we're at as a state.
I think the question you're asking is a really complex one, because one of the frameworks that we're building is this understanding that the crossroads we're at move us to a lot of different futures. There's been a lot of effort in the past to try and create some sort of long-term comprehensive plan of various sorts that try to articulate a path forward. But I think it is correct that we're at a crossroads. We know that our fiscal situation at this point is at best tenuous. Perhaps it's 10 years past being tenuous. We know that our extraction industries that have served us well, created lots of great jobs, contributed to our civic space, those are largely at a mature point. We may have a new mine open one day, but we'll have another one close. We may have a new oil field that develops some new oil, but we'll have another one that's in decline. We'll have a fishery that has a great year. We'll have another one that's down. So this crossroads represents this idea that our primary economy is mature. It's a wonderful history that has brought us to this point. But we know fiscally we're not on a sustainable path. We know that the current extraction economy is not going to provide the significant growth that creates opportunities for the next generation. And we know that aspects of our state's vitality, like the rural community sustainability, the viability of subsistence lifestyles is in question. So the crossroads to me reflect a variety of perspectives of our economy, our people, our communities. And I think it's a wonderful place to, rather than see these as a host of problems, to switch mindsets and look at this from an opportunity mindset of what do these crossroads allow us to imagine could be.
Mm-hmm. Yes, I picked up from reading your material a sense of frustration that we just debate, you know, the price of a PFD check or the amount of a PFD check or which budget can take another hit or, you know, what about taxes? But we just seem to circle around in that. And you're kind of suggesting that we would leap over that. I mean, it's hard to do because you think, gosh, I don't have my rent this month or, oh, gosh, there's no food in the cupboard. You know, it's hard to get that long-term mindset. But could you talk a little bit about that? I mean, maybe how you do that when you're scared of the wolf at the door kind of thing?
Yeah. Well, you know, certainly the need for immediate security, you know, is a necessity for everyone. But I do believe that there is always in that need for security, a need for some vision of what things could be. There's some great work by Benjamin Friedman out of Harvard in a book called The Moral Consequences of Economic Growth that's had a big influence on my thinking. And one of the foundational elements that he presents is that if people don't feel that they have an opportunity to keep up with those around them, and if they don't feel that there's a future opportunity for them, then they begin to kind of entrench in on themselves and pull back. And he points out in this work how important, how vital for communities even it is for people to have a sense of optimism and to see where they're going long term, so that even if things today are really hard, they know there's something better coming. And part of the genesis of this has been this underlying question of, do we know where we're going as a state? And as you mentioned, you know, as you started this question, you know, we've kind of tongue-in-cheek poked at this PFD question, because what we're really, you know, suggesting is that if we don't know where we're going, it's much harder to try and figure out how to make the decisions that are in front of us today. And so our effort is one of thinking about how do we change the discussion, and as you suggested, kind of leap past the immediate morass of issues that are kind of hard, they're kind of the same issues for 10 years, and jump to a discussion about what could be, because I do believe, you know, that it is in creating that perspective of where we're going that we'll then have more capacity to make the hard decisions and to make the right decisions in the short term.
Mm. You know, one of the things that I read was that, and I'm pulling this from your sense that people withdraw when they don't see opportunity, they pull away. And one point in your writings that I read was this idea that you really have to have an idea of a mutual benefit. What's going to work for everyone versus what's going to work for me? And can I get mine? And I guess I feel like it's that old argument about the pie is only small, and I can see there's only 8 pieces, so I better get my piece before the pie is gone. And, you know, you're describing something about seeing what's possible. So limitless pie, I guess, in some way. But it's difficult to get there when we're not thinking about each other, but thinking about ourselves. Is that making sense, Kai? And Sarah, I'm going to pull you in here in a minute just to see, you know, what you want to contribute. Go ahead, Kai.
Yeah, it is making sense. And this, again, I refer to this research from Benjamin Friedman. He makes exactly the case that I think you're touching on, that when people don't know where they're going, when they don't see the path to a better future, and he's correlated this to philanthropic giving, to people's opinions about immigration laws, to people's willing to volunteer their time, that all of those things that we value in, you know, a progressive growing society, people kind of pull in. And so it is that human nature that when we're threatened, when we feel that our future is uncertain, that we don't have as much interest in somebody else's future when we don't even know what ours is.
Yeah.
And, you know, we're getting a little into the personal psychology, which is a little deeper than we're trying to go with AKV3. Mm-hmm. But it does touch on the underlying ethos that we want to engage people in a positive way about the opportunities that the future holds, and move the discussion out of all of the current problems. And quite frankly, there's a lot of great people that are working really hard on the immediate problems. And what we found was we don't need to put an oar into that water. We're going to jump ahead of them and try and offer a discussion and help build a perspective that might pull us in the direction we need to go. Because the research on strategic planning has always found that there's 2 secrets to any strategic plan. One is you got to know where you're going, and the second is you have to build a path to get there. And our fundamental premise is we don't know where we're going as a state.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Of course, it's a big jump to go from we're lost in the woods here to, door number 3, that's what we want. So, but let me ask Sarah. Sarah, do you want to jump in and add anything to what we've talked about so far?
Yeah, absolutely. I think a good point on top of Kai's most recent point about, you know, the 2 parts of strategic planning is having an idea, which is where I think we come in at AKV3, and then knowing how you're getting there. And I think that's the point we're not trying to answer. We're not trying to fill in the blank here. We're just trying to start the conversation. And looping that back around to, you know, people's fear of moving forward, of even taking the time to envision something that's beyond their immediate fears or needs, is we're also trying to create a conversation that meets people where they're at. We're not trying to ask you to be different in order to start thinking about these things. You can have those fears and those immediate needs and also imagine where you would like to go.
Mm-hmm.
And then, you know,
go ahead, Sarah.
Certainly. And the last point I think that's also important is when thinking about this next economy, when thinking about where you would like to go, it's also important to many Alaskans to validate and recognize how far past economies have taken us. You know, how our cultural and our historical significance has impacted the place we are at today. And, you know, we're not, of course, trying to hash on anyone here where things that took us here weren't important. They certainly were. I think the main point is that they're just not going to bring us through to the next growth cycle.
Mm-hmm. Just to let our listeners know, if you've just joined us, we're talking about Alaska version 3.0. It's kind of a grassroots group of people talking about what is next for Alaska, recognizing the fact that the oil industry, which has been incredibly helpful to Alaska and done so much, is in a mature phase now. And even though it's still giving us many results, we can see that it's declining. And, you know, as Kai talked, you know, we rely on fisheries, we rely on tourism, but they go up and they go down. And I guess the question is, how sustainable are they? And so this group, Alaska Version 3.0, is really trying to imagine the future by describing the way you would like it to be, the way you would like it to feel for your children or your grandchildren or the next generation. So that's what we're talking about today. We are inviting people, if you've got some ideas on where Alaska should go, what is next for Alaska, please feel free to send us an email at hometown@alaskapublic.org, and we'll try to share those on the air. But let me go back to Kai and Sarah here. I want to go to Kai. There's something diagnostic about, I know you talk about leaping over and not getting snagged up in the same old arguments, but my question here is a little bit about how do we know, I guess it's this diagnostic idea, like we know we're in trouble because, you know, I think about things like the lack of affordable housing, the extremely high cost and therefore unreachability of higher education, you know, income inequality, poverty. Are those signs that that our existing system is failing us, or are you thinking that some of these problems will be endemic in any economy that we have? Could you tackle that a little bit, Kai?
The issues that you're touching on, I think, are, you know, foundational challenges that, you know, as I travel around, many economies face. But they face them in kind of two different perspectives. One perspective are communities that have developed the market economy strength in partnership with the civic economy, and the civic economy is where you deal with those issues, public, you know, housing issues, education, transportation. That's the civic economy, the things that are valuable but not profitable, versus the market economy that does all those things that are valuable and profitable. And some economies, you know, recognize those two have to work together, but you can't do the good work of strengthening the civic economy, housing, health, community, whatnot, if you don't also have a growing and healthy market economy. And so where we're trying to approach this is to recognize that the two are interdependent, and that we need to look at how to strengthen the market economy, that next economy, so that we can do more of the work that needs to be done in our civic economy. So to me, they're kind of a hand-in-glove challenge. They both have to work well. Certainly, we have challenges in our civic economy. You know, I just was in Portland a few weeks ago. I'll tell you, the homelessness issue in the Northwest is really, it's just frightening, as you saw in the Anchorage Daily News article recently.
Yes, yes.
But if you don't have the strength of the market economy, you don't have the strength to do it. And quite frankly, back to our earlier discussion, if people don't have the faith and the belief in where you're going as an economy, they kind of pull back in the effort to work on those problems. So it's a complex interplay of those issues. But I just came out of Santa Fe, New Mexico, a few days ago. And there you see an example of a community that really has embraced this build for zero, for example, around homelessness. But it's because they have the vitality of their market economy and the health or the perspective of their people and their future that they're building, that they can tackle those problems in a more proactive and make the bigger investments that are needed there. So it's a complex question. I hope that begins.
Yeah, no, it is. And I want to ask a leadership question. You know, I think about here you have this grassroots group of people who come from many walks of life and have many different things to contribute, and we'll meet some of them in the program. But they're not in the legislature. So, you know, I guess I want to get at that leader. How do you lead when you have not been elected leaders? Do you think about that?
Yeah, well, it's a challenging question. And, you know, first off, I think it's really important to be clear that our effort at this point is not to figure out what the next economy is. as a group and even as individuals. Our effort is working on the question of how can we create the processes to engage Alaskans in this discussion. So this discussion we're having today is great. We had another one to APU students. We're trying to figure out the process of engaging the community as opposed to being the ones that will figure it out. But to your point, you know, there's kind of three general centers of power if you look at how the world works. One is having resources, one is having decision making, and one is having knowledge. And the legislature certainly has, you know, control. The administration has some of the assets that we have and whatnot. Well, I think we're trying to change the narrative about the knowledge that we have about the future that we hope will influence those people that have more direct control over the allocation of resources. And maybe I hope we will begin to influence the thinking of people who vote, who choose who they want to represent them. Maybe we'll encourage the elected officials to start thinking differently about the future. Maybe we'll get a few of them to recognize that they kind of have an empty plan for the future, and maybe they need to start investing in it. So we're trying to strengthen the knowledge narrative of that three-legged stool of how we approach things, and trying to figure out the path ahead. Maybe down the road there'll be folks that, you know, support what we're working on that are part of the legislature. That's kind of down the road. Right now we're just trying to figure out how do we engage people in the kind of discussion we're having here. And I hope the thoughts of people that are listening to this program, that'll start, you know, themselves engaging this question of what's next, Alaska.
Mm-hmm. Well, Kai, we have to take a break right now, and I am going to thank you so much for joining us this morning. We're going to be introducing other members of Alaska Version 3 as we move through the program. Sarah's going to stay with us, but I want to thank you so much. I could have talked to you for a whole hour about this. I had other questions coming up about paint me a picture for how this happens, but I think we got the drift of a new way of thinking, and I do send our listeners to hometownatalaskapublic.org, to the homepage for Hometown, because we do have links to your website and an email address if people want to start talking to Alaska Version 3.0. So anyway, we're going to take a tiny break, and you're listening to Hometown Alaska. I'm your host, Kathleen McCoy.
You're listening to Hometown Alaska from Alaska Public Media. For more information about this episode, visit us online at alaskapublic.org.
The conversations you hear on Hometown Alaska are focused on the needs and voices of Alaskans, and the generosity of Alaskans brings them to you. Join your neighbors and become a member of your public radio station today.
Welcome back to Hometown Alaska. I'm your host, Kathleen McCoy. Today, we're talking about Alaska Version 3, which is kind of a grassroots group that is pondering the question, what comes next for Alaska? We have a mature oil industry. We have vital fisheries. We have tourism. We have many things that support our economy. And yet, we also see that they are in some ways shrinking, being affected by, for example, the pandemic affected our tourism industry dramatically. But, you know, we need a path forward, and it probably includes all of these, but may be including new ideas we haven't thought of yet. And that's what Alaska Version 3 is pondering. Sarah is still with me, and what we're going to do in this segment is we're going to meet some additional Alaska Version 3 contributors or members or participants, however you describe it, who are working on what's going on at Third and Ingra. So I'd like to welcome Ryan Witten. Hi, Ryan. Are you on? Hello, Ryan.
Hello, can you hear me?
Yes, I can hear you now. Welcome to Hometown Alaska. Thank you so much for joining us. We are still reaching out to Mita DeWitt. We expect, and I think I'm getting a signal that we're successful, because we wanted to bring you two in. Sarah Kattari is still on with us. She'll be on through the whole program. But what we are doing now is talking about Third and INGRA, which is a project that Alaska Version 3 is interested in and working on, and that's what Ryan and Mita DeWitt are going to talk to us about today. And Mita, I believe you're here with us. Hello, Mita.
Good morning. How are you today?
Oh, good morning, and welcome to Hometown Alaska. I'm so happy to have you. We have you and Ryan on together right now, and Sarah is with us also. So let's start talking about, first let me tell folks who you are. Ryan Whitten is, I think, the greenhouse manager at Seeds of Change, which is affiliated with Alaska Behavioral Health. It makes opportunities for young people to learn how to grow living things, plants. I've seen your facility, I think it's on Arctic, a lot of hydroponic towers, but also gardens outside. So Ryan, do I have that right? That is the description of Seeds of Change. Anything you want to add there?
Yeah, you nailed it. The only thing I would add is that we work with youth 16 to 24 to build basic workforce development skills. And we primarily use vertical hydroponics and traditional agriculture to build those skills. But our focus is really on serving the youth in our community.
So jobs and job skills and a way to enter the economy themselves. And Mita DeWitt is an Alaska Native traditional healer. Mita, I know that you participated in a healing ceremony at Third and INGRA, the site that we're talking about. This was the place where the older Alaska Native Hospital stood for many years, a really strong meeting place for many people, urban and rural, to meet. But the building is gone. The site has been vacant. I was shocked to see that it was like 24 or 25 years, because I remember the hospital being there, and I was shocked that it had been empty this long. So, Mita, let me go to you and tell me a little bit about what's going on at this site and a little bit about the healing ceremony that you participated in on Saturday.
Yes, thank you very much. So, Blake Cock, and Achmed Dor, Yuchat Dorsak, Singet Chira, Zaytanak, Yuchat Dorsak, Nanyaina Chasati, Kachari Yari Chasati, Shtakin, Kwan Ayachat. That's my introduction. My Tlingit name is Blake Nakhinkokklot. I am Tlingit from Southeast. And thanks for having me on today. Yes, this weekend was beautiful. We had people come together from basically all sections of our city. We had the mayor was there. We had people from Alaska Native Tribal Health Consortium, from Health Central Foundation. We had the local Iqutna representative who came to be there. We had dance groups. We also had Matt Schultz, who's a Presbyterian preacher. And we had our elders do prayers and acknowledgments and talked about the importance of that space. You know, the Alaska Native Services Hospital was definitely an institution, and it was such a pivotal space that in our minds it still exists there, right? But if you go down to the site, it is an open lot. They did take the building down about 25 years ago. There was remediation of the soil because it was an old military hospital. And then nothing has been built there for a couple of different reasons. One, it is sacred space. People were born there. People died there. People, you know, survived illness there. They received care there. We had people who came together from all over the state into that main hospital. So you would see friends and family and community. In this wisdom of understanding, the city has actually not developed that site into just, you know, purely commercial use, because it does have that aspect to it. And in this transformation that Ryan's a part of and the city's a part of and other partners who've come together to vision the highest and best use, it was acknowledged that that sacredness and that meaning in the Native community had to be represented. So we came together as a community, and we brought together both traditional indigenous practice and Western Christian practices into the same space to acknowledge and respect everybody's traditions. Because we're going to move forward as a community, we have to respect each other. And so that was a pivotal point of the day's event. We had a ceremonial fire dish where we, you know, went through that process, which is sacred to us in honoring our ancestors. We also had a contemporary cathartic art piece that was visioned by Mrs. Reginoff that we went through. And we had a lot of beautiful stories, right, and people speaking to the power of that space and speaking to the vision of what's to come. So thank you.
Let's just talk a little bit about what's to come. I know that Ryan is a part of that in terms of where the muscles will come from, too. But I think staying with you, Mita, could you describe what the plans are for that site, and then we'll jump in and talk with Ryan, too.
Yes, there loosely at this point, there is going to be some development, but the development in itself, the only thing that we really pinned down is there has to be some residential space. There also has to be some space to help, and this is part of our interface with the AKV3, right, is that supporting new industry, supporting this vision of what Alaska is in the future. And so the development will have a place for teaching art and culture and healing through those processes. There will also be businesses. And so that's part of it. The other part, because I'm a traditional plant educator, that I'm really excited about is, Brian will speak more to this, but we will have community gardens, and we will have educational spaces for, you know, teaching how to grow and create products for food sustainability and job sustainability. And then the other part of the site is going to be Alaska Native Heritage Space, which is going to be a living space. So a lot of times people create memorials and they're static or past tense, but this, to create a heritage space, will have areas for people to gather, to celebrate. There may even be something like an amphitheater. We'll have traditional indigenous food gardens, because one of the things that isn't realized in the larger context is Alaska Native people had a deeply integrated relationship with the environment, where we cultivated the natural ecosystems, so they created abundance. And that abundance helped to feed us. It helped to feed and nourish the plant and animal and fish world. And then the, you know, what I was over the needed amounts was traded for to neighboring groups or shared with neighboring groups, and helped to create this kind of viable economy that was part of our traditional pre-contact cultures.
Let me ask this. You know, I hear a lot of vision and images of what it will be. Is there a timetable? And I bet there's partners. I don't know for sure, but I know it's going to take the community. It almost sounds like a community center in so many ways. But how will we get there? Is that known yet, or is that still in the formative stages, Mita?
I'd actually like to pass the ball to Ryan.
Okay, good.
I'd like to hear from him.
Okay. Ryan, tell me a little bit about maybe the partnerships that are part of transforming this space at Third and Ingra.
Yeah, thank you, Kathleen. I'm really glad that you asked that question, because I think that the community collaboration is such a core part of Alaska version 3, and why I'm so excited about the Third and Ingra site. You know, the ceremony that Mita put on over the course was very beautiful, and it really, you saw folks from all sorts of different walks of life, from all different community organizations that were present and who are committed, who are willing to invest in that site, in its heritage, and in its future. And I think that's you know, what Alaska Version 3 is hoping to do is to elevate those projects, those opportunities in our community and around our state that are investable, not just with money, but with our time, with our care, with our attention. And I think that's a really important thing to look to. And, you know, the third and ingress site has had a wonderful collaboration of people come together. Shelley Routon with the Heritage Land Bank has done a great job of facilitating conversations to build a site plan. Liz Snyder with Alaska Food Policy Council has helped to facilitate some future visioning for that site as well. And then other members of the Food Policy Council have been working together on site to get a fish orchard together.
What kind of orchard, Ryan? What did you say?
Fish totes.
Fish tote. Oh, got it. Okay.
You can use these fish totes that are present all over Alaska, and you can grow trees in them. So that hopefully if you're in a rural community and you maybe don't have a great set of soil built up, you can do a little composting, and then you can put your composted soil into a fish tote, and you can still grow food. You can still feed yourself in your community. And that really is kind of like the bigger hope for that site, is that we can test out different ideas. We can demonstrate different growing techniques, different sustainable power generation and food generation techniques, and then we can share them with other communities around the state. And so the hope is that, you know, with the Food Policy Council, we can help to make some larger scale change and help to share the knowledge that's learned on site.
Mm-hmm.
You know, on the lots of exciting stuff happening there, that's for sure.
You know, and you touched on a little bit how this fits into Alaska Version 3. I know that Kai emphasizes, Sarah emphasizes, we're not delivering the answer, you know. We're saying, let's have a process together. And so that's messier, you know. I mean, it's not a straight line, right? Is that frustrating, or is that, do you just have to learn to take a breath and say this is going to take a while? What do you think, Ryan?
Yeah, I think that it absolutely is messier, but I think it's really important. When we look at our community right now and look at the recent election cycle, we had almost a 50-50 divide in the ways that people were voting. When we look at the national level, we have a nearly 50-50 divide. And I think that one of the most important things that we can do together is to come together and just talk and to realize that we're just people, and that we're all invested in the future of the state, and that we are all invested in the future of the people who are going to live here. And so, you know, I'm frequently reminded of the saying, if you want to go far, if you want to go fast, go alone. If you want to go far, go together. And I think that, you know, we could take the approach and just say, here's what we're going to do, and we're going to make it all happen really quickly. But ultimately, you know, with the third and Ingress site and with Alaska Version 3, the hope isn't that we're looking, you know, to next year to make a big splash, or even 3 years from now. We're really trying to look 10 years out, 30 years out, 100 years out to see what are the important changes that we could be making so that we can live together and that we can be healthy and happy and we can have a vibrant Alaska.
Mm-hmm. Mm. When you put it in context with, you know, the divide that we experience all the time, it's stark, right? I mean, it does. How do we come together? It sounds like Alaska Version 3, because it's not offering an answer, will probably generate smaller projects like Third and Ingra. Is that kind of, as opposed to a sweeping new industry that we can invest in, right? I mean, it sounds almost like a collective or a communal approach to moving forward. And I'm just kind of reaching for those words. Can you comment on that, Ryan?
Sure. You know, I'm going to borrow some words from Mita. You know, the hope with Alaska Version 3 isn't that we're a think tank, but that we're a doing tank. And the Alaska Version 3 itself isn't trying to offer solutions, but the hope is that by getting people together to talk, to envision solutions, that then you get people who are interested in then taking action on those solutions.
Mm-hmm.
And they can sort of find challenges that they're willing to work on and invest on that are near and dear to them in their own community, and they can work on
them. Mm-hmm. It's very grassroots, yeah. Go ahead.
Yeah, connect and collaborate. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I'm going to just say we had an idea come in via email from a woman named Lynn, and her question is, and again, she's thinking the future economy, what's next for Alaska. She says, has anyone considered the part our wealth of water might play as global warming affects the lower 48, particularly in the West? And so this idea of water as a commodity that we could take advantage of. From what I have read, and we're going to get into regenerative economies as we go forward in the show, but I don't know whether it's Mita or Sarah, but would one of you comment on this idea? Well, gosh, we've got a lot of water. They need a lot of water. Maybe we should sell our water. What's a response to that, Mita?
I'd love to respond to this. So water, it's going to actually transform quite a bit, you know, water is itself, but we as a nation and Western advancement likes to put industry at port cities, which is at sea level. So we know by the research and the mapping out of climate change as it's going to come in the future is that sea level is going to rise. We have the destabilization of the Arctic and Antarctic ice sheets, increasing the amount of, just the volume. And then there's the warming, which also increases the volume. So what's going to happen is not only are we going to have more arid areas in the equatorial parts of the world, which are already arid, right, that's going to increase, and that bandwidth is going to also increase, but the precipitation is actually going to increase in other parts of the world. So Alaska, we already get a lot of rain, so the idea of more precipitation is, like drinking from the fire hydrant, literally. But we aren't going to have the glaciers and the snowpack to hold it. So if this is the way that we're going to go forward, because it is an actual viable means of economic stability in the future, one of them, because we want to diversify, we have to be strategic in our thinking. So instead of creating open pit mines, which will, threaten and eventually damage some of the most pristine lakes on Earth, we have to think about how do we store this water efficiently. And we can't do one-offs anymore, right? There's only, you make profit off of it one time, you damage the environment, and then you're done with it. We can't be so wasteful anymore. We're already seeing the repercussions of that in many spaces. And so we have to start strategically thinking like, oh, well, if we have these large areas that we're using for reservoirs of water, so that way we can have enough water ourselves. And that's something that should be in our constitution, is the Alaskan's right to water. So we have like our PFD that we are entitled to. We should also be entitled to first dibs as tribes and as people, Alaskans, to have access to our clean water, because other places, the residents are losing their rights to water. So that's the first thing that we have to deal with. Secondly, we have to look at, we have these reserves of water, how can we use them? And we start looking at pumped hydro storage, and, then we can start looking at large volumes of clean energy that's available to us that helps support our food systems, our industry systems, our transportation systems, our living systems.
Right? Rita, I have to jump in. I'm so sorry. I have to jump in. We need to take a tiny break, which is something we have to do. But it does sound like you wouldn't be up for selling it as quickly as we could to make money. The idea of sustaining that resource is what's really emerging now. But let's take a tiny break. You're listening to Hometown Alaska. I'm your host, Kathleen McCoy. We'll be right back.
You're listening to Hometown Alaska on Alaska Public Media. You can find Hometown Alaska on alaskapublic.org or wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome Welcome back to Hometown Alaska. I'm your host, Kathleen McCoy. We kind of ran off a little bit on our last segment, and I have to say, I want to say thank you to Ryan Witten, who joined us from Seeds of Change. We're going to keep Mita on with us into segment three because we're going to talk a little bit about regenerative economies and specifically about the Tlingit culture and some of its historical approaches to economy. So thank you, Ryan. I think you may be gone already, but thank you so much for joining us. And we're going to welcome Margie, who's joined us for this third segment. Margie, welcome to Hometown Alaska.
Hi, thank you so much.
And you're on with Mita, and of course, Sarah is still with us. And we ran a little bit over, so I'm going to move on into the regenerative economy idea. And again, if listeners have ideas about what they'd like to see Alaska doing next for its economic engines, send us an email at hometown@alaskapublic.org. We're talking with Alaska version 3.0, which is really what comes next for Alaska. So regenerative economies is one of the things that's being talked about a lot. I'm going to turn to you, Margie, just to give us some definitions. And what is different with a regenerative economy, say, than the one we're using right now?
Sure. And I can segue in terms of the conversation about water as well. In our current extractive model, commodification of resources tend to see a lot of profits leaving our state. And in the work that I get to do for Native Movement and the Fairbanks Climate Action Coalition, we are really trying to expand the realm of possibility and think about what is that bright and thriving future we can build for Alaskans to thrive here for generations to come, and really seeing regenerative principles as the foundation for that. So a regenerative economy builds community wealth that in ways that enhance ecological and social well-being. And the profits are reinvested into the places that generate those profits. And so in terms of what that looks like here in Alaska, as a lifelong Alaskan, I've seen the ways that pursuing my education have taken me out of state. I've seen the ways that my friends have left for jobs. And I look forward to the future where there's so much in Alaska that it attracts people from outside, it retains the best and the brightest, and that we are able to sustain our many life ways in ways that don't deplete the foundation of our love for our home.
Right. I was, you know, scouring around on the internet, learning what regenerative economies are, and I read that it fits into a capitalist framework in the sense that what you have, the asset you have, is the earth. You know, you have to take care of it. That's the asset that you have to sustain. And I guess I'm looking to Mita maybe to jump in here and talk a little bit about, that view that, you know, what is of value in a regenerative economy versus maybe a strict, I don't know if it's right to say a capitalist economy, because as I said, I read that a regenerative economy can fit into the capitalist framework. So can you help us a little bit with that, Mita?
Yeah. So in a regenerative economy, right, we have to look at the key word, right? How do you regenerate? And so you want to look at, I like the term actually, living economy, and things that are in a cyclical nature that help to feed the next iteration. So one of the issues that we have with the capitalistic economy that we have now, so we're not going to throw it all out the door, right? Because we're very American and we see the values in it. But part of the issue that we have is it's very pyramidic. But it has that structure that feeds into condensed wealth by very few people. And we know from pyramid schemes in the past that that doesn't actually work. That's a one-way trip to ending it. So if we look at a regenerative economy, we have to look at, you know, people can do well, people can build themselves, but how do we support community? How do we support the environment so that we're all successful at the same time and that it's in perpetuity?
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, it's kind of interesting. If you think about capitalism, you think about, well, we look at corporations and say, well, they have to do that for their shareholders, right? They have to be ruthless because they have to answer to their shareholders. But the regenerative economy, we're all the shareholders, I guess. It's a different way of thinking about it. So it's interesting. It does feel like, you know, when you think about the income gap and the consolidation of wealth in certain parts of the economy and other people suffering so much, it seems like we're way out of balance. So I don't know. It's just a food for thought, I guess, is what I would say about it. But, you know, I'm looking at the clock and I'm thinking I do want to have both Mita and Margie talk a little bit about a paper they're working on that is looking at the way the Tlingit economy, the Tlingit culture had an economy. And I'm going to ask you to do it in about 3 minutes because then I want to bring Sarah on to talk a little bit about the writing competition, asking Alaskans to envision what comes next. So let's touch on that research paper. Mita, I'll start with you.
Well, thank you. We can go back to, you know, the selling water analogy. So basically, in our traditional way of being, we looked at the environment, the plants and animals and fish, and they were our partners in the economic structure. They were beneficiaries in the economic structure. So what you had to do is learn how to not harm, first off, right? And how to benefit your economic partners, which that health and wellness is an outcome. It's one of the payoffs of that structure.
Mm-hmm.
So like with the water, we have to make sure that our communities benefit first in these ways. We have to make sure that we're using it multiple ways to benefit these different groups and not just ourselves. We also have to make sure that we have enough and abundance. And then whatever is left over, then you can sell, then you can trade, then you can take care of other groups as well. And there has to be giveaway, right? There has to be generosity built into the structure so that way we're meeting those core spiritual, cultural values and being humans with compassion. And if you take out that compassion, then whatever you build is going to be insufficient.
Mm-hmm.
So looking really at, instead of the individualistic concept, the community concept.
Mm-hmm. Forward. Mm. How about you, Margie, anything to add? And of course, we're talking about this being historically the Tlingit approach to a sustainable economy. Am I right?
Yeah, and we're also interviewing community elders and leaders from other Alaska Native communities. So really looking at how the wisdom to inform our path forward is here, and there's actually that continuity and generational knowledge as well as lived experience of what these economies look like and feel like in practice. And so really seeing it not as something static in the past, but really something that is a tremendous asset of deep wisdom and value in Alaska to today and into the future. And so those systems that work together for a shared well-being rather than individual wealth accumulation are a huge part of remembering our way forward and looking to a just transition off of fossil fuels where everyone can be prosperous and we can see the economic infrastructure of our state adjust to the realities of climate change and a post-oil economy.
Mm-hmm. You know, I got another email from Dick Lefevre who says he makes a point, it's on the water issue again, that the question, California in 1991, the governor apparently, Dick tells us, was proposed building a water pipeline to solve his state's drought. And 25 years later, the state is in a worse drought and the idea is still crazy as hell, he says. So I guess, you know, if the water is a resource for so many, you can't just take it for yourself and not sustain it because it will the pipe will run dry as he's pointing out here in California. So, but anyway, I have to bring Sarah back on. Sarah, I hope you're still there and that you've been following all along with us. Are you there?
Oh, gosh, I feel like I've been right alongside the listeners, just enthralled with everyone's points of view.
Well, it's really been very interesting, and it's a dynamic lineup of guests, and we have to, you know, keep moving. But we've got about 3 minutes left, I'd say, maybe four, and I wanted to bring you on. You have basically Alaska Version 3 had a writing contest inviting Alaskans to say what they see as next. And I have not seen what people have turned in, but I'm going to say to you, Sarah, you might read an excerpt from one, I think, and you said it flowed from regenerative economics. So go ahead.
Yeah, absolutely. I'll give a little bit of context. So, you know, part of our Alaska Version 3 idea is to bring in the conversation. You know, we want to meet people where they're at and bring them into this conversation, not to have the answer, but to help us imagine. And so we ran a writing contest that was targeted to all Alaskans, but we did have specific prizes for youth as well. There were three categories. You could do a short story, essay, or poem. And the grand prize winner was a woman named Carolyn Creamers, and her essay was called Field Trip to the Future. I won't read the whole essay. You'll see it published in Alaska Humanities Forum, I believe their autumn edition of their publication. But here's a quick excerpt that I think flows really nicely from this regenerative economy conversation. Terry's voice continues, and in this essay, Terry is a scientist, just so you know. Then I realized I couldn't understand the plant without studying the particular environment of the plant. So I studied that. Then I realized I couldn't understand the environment without studying the ecosystem and the place of the plant and its environment within the ecosystem. So I studied that. This scientist, I realized, is telling me a story. In his humble voice, he's telling a story. Then I realized I couldn't understand the ecosystem without studying the relationship between the ecosystem and disturbance. So I studied that. Then I realized I couldn't understand the ecosystem and disturbance without studying the relationship between humans and the ecosystem and disturbance. So I studied that. And that is what interests me most now, the relationship between humans, ecosystems, and disturbance. You know, we used to think as scientists that the best way to learn about and understand an organism, such as a plant or a place, was by seeking it out and studying it in its most natural state. But now, maybe we've come to see that there is nothing natural, or rather, everything is, including humans and disturbance.
Very interesting. So I recognize Carolyn Creamers as a local writer. And that is really interesting. I imagine that will these be posted on Alaska Version 3's website at some point after they're in the magazine?
Yeah.
Okay. So if people want...
Yeah, so we're going to let Alaska Humanities Forum publish them first as first dibs. So you can see them in their published version and also online come August, I believe, but I may be wrong about that. And then, yes, absolutely, you can find them on Alaska Version 3's website in the oncoming months, akv3.com. Probably /blog, but
yeah.
It will make clear.
Yeah. Wow. It's just a lot to think about. If people were intrigued and want to, you know, please go to alaskapublic.org, go to the Hometown Alaska homepage, and you'll find a way to email Alaska Version 3. And anyway, as you hear the music coming on, we are out of time. So I really, really want to thank our guests for being so versatile and generous with their time. Kai Holland, Sarah Qatari, Mita DeWitt, Ryan Whitten, and Margie Dashevsky, and of course our listeners and callers. Hometown Alaska is taking a break for the next 8 weeks, returning in mid-August. In its place, KSKA will air the program With Good Reason from PRX Radio. With host Sarah McConnell, scholars explore the worlds of literature, science, the arts, politics, history, and business. Find us on the web at alaskapublic.org. Toby Shelburne was our audio engineer. Thanks for joining us today on Hometown Alaska.
Hometown Alaska is a production of Alaska Public Media, which is solely responsible for its content. Views expressed are those of the participants and not necessarily those of Alaska Public Media, this station, or its underwriters. Hometown Alaska's theme song, Lead Dog, is by Kevin Barnett from Eagle River. Learn more about Hometown Alaska and listen online at alaskapublic.org. This is Alaska Public Media.